The following presentation was recorded at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, Malvern East, Australia. Please visit our website at bsv.net.au.
So, welcome to the Buddha Loka Centre, the Buddhist Society of Victoria, this evening for the Monday night meditation. So it's lovely to meditate together. And just to give you a bit of an introduction to, or give you the announcements that we're having. On Saturday we won't be having a meditation day. It's a one to mention. Tomorrow night there will be meditation here with Sandeep. I don't know, some of you may come to that, I'm not sure. And then on Sunday, we usually have a talk here, but we won't be. We'll be having our Vesak celebration, the celebration of the Buddha's birth, awakening, and also his passing away. We'll be at the monastery in Newbury, Newbury Buddhist Monastery. So you're welcome to come to that on Sunday, 7th of May, this Sunday. And it's at 9:30, from 9:30 to 1:30. So you're welcome to come to that. And of course, I didn't mention, but Friday night there will also be a fundraiser at the Kuanming Temple in Braybrook, and that will be from 6:30. And I think you have to check the website for tickets and all that sort of thing. It's a fundraiser for our meditation retreat centre. Yeah, maybe a little louder. And the last thing is there will also be a talk by Ajahn Brahm. All these Vesak events, the fundraiser and the Sunday Vesak celebration, and also the talk at Box Hill Town Hall, will be by Ajahn Brahm. He's coming from Western Australia. If you know who Ajahn Brahm is, I think many of you will, from Western Australia. So that just gives you an idea of the program. And also next Monday night will be online. It'll be Ajahn Brahm teaching from Newbury Buddhist Monastery online. So you can see it on YouTube. So that'll be great. He can reach much many more people than he could fit in here. This hall's too small for him. That's right. That Monday night this will be closed. Will Tuesday be? It'll be the normal Tuesday, I think. Oh, yes, I think even though the town hall talk is happening on Tuesday, yeah. So that gives you an idea of the announcements anyway. That's the announcement. And I'll just mention the format too for the evening for those that are not familiar with it. We usually have like an introduction to the guided meditation and then a guided meditation for roughly 40, 45 minutes. And then after that, comments, questions and complaints. So that's to finish off. So that is the format. And if you're wondering, some of you may think, well, who is this person? This is, I do too. I often think that. Who is this person? It's Ajahn Nisarano. So, and I'm the senior monk at the monastery at Newbury. And I ordained with Ajahn Brahm now 25 years ago. This will be my 26th year when we enter the Rains Retreat this year. So that will be, yeah. And I've spent 13 and a half of those years in Sri Lanka and 8 of those years living in a cave on the side of a mountain and going into the village each morning for the food, arms round, and living on my own for those 8 years. It was lovely, really nice. So that gives a bit of an introduction. So this evening, I thought, I always like to have a theme, an approach. And I don't know if many of you came. Anyone here come for the retreat, Ajahn Brahmali's retreat? Yes, that's right, Van and Pan. Yes, you both came. That's great. It was an 8-day retreat we held here at this centre. And it wasn't residential, as you can probably guess. But the theme of that retreat was a really good theme, how to practice like the Buddha to be. Doesn't that sound great? How to practice. And what it was all the Buddha's teachings where he mentions that when he mentions when I was still unawakened but intent on awakening. So this is before his enlightenment. And so these were practices, these were techniques that he used to become enlightened. So we're all looking eagerly to see the results of this retreat. And also one of the suttas that he, these are the discourses of the Buddha, this teachings of the Buddha, I don't know, for those that don't know, they are voluminous. There are large quantity of teachings, and the four main groups of the teachings are the middle length sayings and the long discourses, and also the numerical discourse arranged by number, and connected discourses arranged by theme or subject. So there's a lot of his teachings, and so the idea of these retreats was to look at those teachings in depth, and they were really well expounded, well explained by the visiting monk Ajahn Brahmali. But one of the teachings that he mentioned was from the Simile of the Lamp Sutta, which focuses on the benefits and fruits from developing the one-pointedness or samadhi, stillness, due to mindfulness of breathing. And this mindfulness of breathing is really one of the major meditation techniques that Buddhism is taught in Buddhism. So I thought to focus on that. And and one of the things that's very nice about this this sutta, this discourse that I mentioned, is that in this, the Buddha mentions that I too often practice this kind of meditation, and while I was often practicing this kind of meditation, neither my body nor my eyes became fatigued, and my mind was freed from defilements by not grasping. So if you're wondering about the fatigued body and eyes, anybody wondering about that? It was quite interesting because, of course, before the Buddha, some of the practices the Buddha did were these ascetic practices, you know, like eating very little food, sleeping very little, living outside, living at the root of a tree, many, many practices that he did. And they almost led to his death. He was very close to it. So it didn't fatigue the body. And people might not, and I didn't really think about it, fatigue the eyes? Looking at kasina meditation. Have you heard of kasina meditation? These are discs of colour, often colour, and you look at them, and from that you develop this one-pointedness of mind. And many people try that, but it's not that easy because it tires the eyes if you don't look the right way, if you don't look with a soft gaze. And I've tried that. I've done some kasina meditation, and I agree completely. I always thought, well, you know, because most people think, well, we're very visual, so this should be easy. But in actual fact, when you are looking at a coloured disc for a long time and you're really bringing it up, internalising that disc, that colour inside, it's not easy. It sounds easy, but it's actually quite tiring. Whereas the breath, wow, our breath can be almost anything. I think the breath is very a very, very useful meditation subject. And it's the brilliance of the Buddha that his main meditation was based on the breath. Because we have the breath with us at all times. I don't think there's anyone here that's without the breath 24/7. And it's a great teacher. It's a great subject for meditation. And it's a great teacher because we can see the nature, you may not believe this, the nature of reality. You can see in our breath that everything is impermanent and it's never completely satisfactory and it's happening by itself. It's automatic. It's not driven by a person. So this is something that the breath can teach us, really. And the importance of what the Buddha mentioned here is that this has led to his awakening when he mentions that my mind was freed from defilements by not grasping, not clinging. That means he became enlightened using this technique. You think, wow, this humble breath can lead to all these things. But it has to be seen in the right way and has to be seen with a wisdom too. And he says that if we wish to free the mind from grasping without defilements, this is a very suitable method or technique to practice. So this is giving the sales pitch for the mindfulness of breathing, or anapanasati. And of course, it's taught in a number of places in the Buddha's teachings. I think many people will know the focuses, the four focuses of mindfulness, Satipatthana. It's taught in there, and it's also taught in two other places in the suttas, and in more detail, actually, than those two. And the reason it can allow us to become enlightened, the Buddha said, is because it fulfills these four focuses of mindfulness, and then it fulfills the seven factors of awakening as well. And this is leading directly to enlightenment. So, and it leads to what the Buddha calls true knowledge and deliverance. This is awakening. So I don't know if that's... Probably for some people that may sound too much if you've never heard about this mindfulness of breathing, but I'm sure many people have heard and have practiced it. So the purpose that I'd like to have, the focus I'd like to have this evening, is to focus on the breath meditation, the basic breath meditation. And I realized when I was doing this retreat, I haven't taught it like this for ever so long. I usually teach breath meditation with quite a few enhancements that I find useful, but we'll see how we go with the technique as taught by the Buddha, as I mentioned, in about three different places. So I just mentioned the description from the Buddha, so you get a bit of an idea from the Buddha. So this is Satipatthana Sutta, the four focuses of mindfulness, and it's the breathing. And this translation is really like a translation summary is from Ajahn Brahm. So it's not as literal as many of the the suttas in the Sutta Central. This is an online source for the Buddha's teaching, a really wonderful online source with the teachings in many languages, English and many other languages. And of course, Bhikkhu Bodhi to his translation. So this is how it goes. So you can just get a bit of an idea. This is how the Buddha taught it. And he says, and this is how Ajahn Brahm translates it. And he's a bit of an expert on breath meditation, so it's good advice. You go to a quiet, secluded place, sit down comfortably, and give priority to establishing mindfulness. Then mindfully you breathe in, mindfully you breathe out. So that's the preliminary introduction to mindfulness of breathing. And a quiet place is always a very good place for meditation, and particularly if we're developing deep meditation. So this is quite important. And to be comfortable is also useful. Otherwise, as Ajahn Brahm often says, it's anapanasati. We're paying attention. It's mindfulness of pain. And of course, for most people, that's really unpleasant. So it's good to be comfortable and to have, like we say, the middle way, not indulging the body and not tormenting the body. One doesn't have to sit in cross-legged, doesn't have to sit in full lotus. So that's good news. And of course, it's very important not to go straight to the breath. And this is what Ajahn Brahmani was talking about. because we need to establish mindfulness. And of course, the way I will introduce it when I do the guided meditation is first of all we make adjustments to the body. We pay attention to the body, see how it is, what it needs to be balanced and comfortable, and then to relax the body from the top of the head to the toes. And it's when we do that, it's with a sort of kind, warm attention. That's what I emphasize. So we're setting the scene. We are inclining the mind in a very, in a positive way. And then it's sort of like a form of body contemplation. Sometimes people wonder. And mindfully you breathe in and mindfully you breathe out. It's just the natural breath. We don't have to manipulate it. We don't have to control it. It's not a yoga breath. We're not holding the breath or any of these sorts of things. So it's just the natural breath we're watching. And it'll be interesting to see. Some people find it's hard when they watch something not to control it. So see how you go with that. And this is the actual four steps. This is the first four steps of this mindfulness of breathing. The full mindfulness of breathing is 16 steps, and it goes through the whole gamut of the body, the feelings, then the mind itself, then after deep meditation, then the wisdom. And so this is the whole of, but I'm only going to teach the first four, or we'll only do the guided meditation on the first four steps of the mindfulness of breathing. So, and it continues. When the in-breath and out-breath are long, you are aware that they are long. So that's very easy. And when the in-breath and out-breath are short, you are aware that they are short. So this is just really to look at the quality of the breath, because it interests the mind much more. If we are aware that the breath is long or it's short, maybe the in-breath is long and the out-breath is long, but it could be a combination too. But of course, any quality of the breath that you notice that comes to your attention is useful. If it were, sometimes the breath can feel very heavy or light, or rough or smooth, or it can feel cool when we breathe in and warm when we breathe out, which is not surprising because we've heated it up. So whatever comes to your attention as a quality that you can notice in the breath. And of course the breath, as we pay attention to it, it tends to shorten. Maybe longer at the beginning, and then it tends to become shorter and shorter. So that's the first two steps, long, long breath, short breath. And then the third step is then you learn to experience the whole of the breath as you breathe in and out. So this is the third step. And the text actually says the whole body, and some meditators practice focusing on the body. But usually it's about breath meditation, so many meditators will continue to focus on the breath, because the Buddha says later in another sutta, he says that another teaching, he says that the breath is one amongst the body, an aspect of the body. So and then you learn to experience the whole of the breath as you breathe in and out. That means that we're practicing. Just by practicing, we can develop more understanding of the breath. And what we're doing when we do that is we're noticing the in-breath, the beginning, middle, and end. Then there's the gap. There's always a gap between the in-breath and the out-breath. And then we notice the beginning, middle, and end of the out-breath. So that's simple. And then as we're developing more, as the mindfulness develops, it becomes more and more continuous. We know the whole breath, and the mind can stay with it. So that's the third step. And the fourth step, and the last step, is Ajahn Brahm translates as, then you learn to calm the breath as you breathe in and out. This is kaya sankhara. You learn to calm the breath. And what we're doing there is allowing the breath just to calm down, allowing the physical aspect of it to calm down, preparing for it to become much more of a mental experience, an experience in the mind, a spiritual experience, from which, you know, the feelings of joy and happiness can come up, or bliss can come up. So this is what it's like, a transition, just move, calming down this aspect of breathing. We're not actually doing it. This is a good point. Not to do the meditation. It will happen quite naturally. But if the attention, if the mind is inclining towards calming, it will tend to calm down. And then, and this is the simile. The Buddha always gives lovely similes that Ajahn Brahm's actually changed to make it more more obvious to people. And he says, just as a skilled painter is aware whether they're making a long brushstroke or a short brushstroke, so too when the in-breath is long, you're aware that it's long. And when the Buddha simile is actually a lathe, you know, these lathes for shaping wood, and it was the same idea, you're making a long stroke or a short stroke on this lathe. So that is the Buddha's, the four steps. And as I mentioned, the first one is the long breath, the second one the short breath, third one the whole breath, the fourth one is calming it all down. And so this is a sort of meditation that took the Buddha to awakening, to enlightenment. So let's give it a go. So, now we can close our eyes and just come into the present. We can just be here now, with nothing we need to do for the moment and nowhere we have to go, just to be here. And we can pay attention to how the body is and make any adjustments that we feel make it more comfortable, more balanced. Maybe the head over the shoulders, balanced. The shoulders over the hips. And the legs comfortably. And the hands either on your lap or on your knees, or however you find comfortable and balanced. And now we can mentally relax the body from the top of the head to the tips of the toes, starting at the head, giving this kind, warm attention to the head and to the back of the head, side of the head, the face, the head and face. Soothing it mentally, like a mental massage. Allowing these areas to relax, especially around the eyes and around the mouth. And we can move the attention to the throat, all around the throat, soothing it, relaxing it, giving this warm attention. Now bringing to mind the left shoulder and moving our attention along the left shoulder with this, giving it a mental massage, relaxing any tension, any strain. Bringing to mind the left arm, starting at the top of the left arm and moving our attention down the left arm, all around it, this warm, kind, relaxing attention, right down to the hand and fingers. Now bringing to mind the right shoulder, starting at the neck and moving our attention along the right shoulder, soothing it, relaxing it, giving it a mental massage. Now bringing to mind the right arm, starting at the top of the right arm and moving our attention down the right arm to the tips of the fingers with this soothing, relaxing, kind attention. Now bringing to mind the back, starting just below the shoulders and moving our attention down the back, giving the back a warm mental massage. And now bringing to mind the front of the body, starting below the shoulders, just below the shoulders, and moving our attention down the front of the body, soothing, relaxing, with this warm, gentle, mental massage, the chest, the abdomen, and the stomach. Now we can bring to mind the left leg, starting at the top of the left leg and moving our attention down the left leg, all around it, giving the left leg this warm, kind mental massage right down to the tips of the toes, relaxing it, soothing it, healing it. Now bringing to mind the right leg, starting at the top of the right leg and moving our attention down the right leg, all around it, right down to the tips of the toes with this warm, soothing, healing attention. Now we can become aware of the whole body sitting comfortably, balanced, here and now, here in the present moment. Nothing to do, and nowhere we have to go. Aware of whatever we're experiencing in the body, the sounds, the temperature, feeling of the body contacting the seat or cushion, whatever, and aware of the mind, what's coming and going. And when the breath comes to our attention, we can notice it coming in and going out. We can mindfully notice the breath coming in and going out, we can think of the breath as a friend, breathing in and breathing out. And we can also, to increase the interest, notice where we're aware of the breath, wherever it is, the nose, throat, chest or abdomen, doesn't matter. Just breathing in and breathing out naturally. Allowing the body to just breathe, paying attention to that. And now, quite naturally, we'll notice the quality of the breath coming in and going out. Maybe it's long or short, rough or smooth, heavy or soft, light. Whatever quality we're aware of as the breath comes in, there's a pause and the breath goes out. Noticing the quality of this humble breath. And we can remember the simile of the long brush strokes and the short brush strokes as we breathe in, maybe with a long breath or short breath, heavy breath or light breath, or a rough breath and a smooth breath, whatever we're aware of, cool breath and a warm breath. And as we pay attention to the quality of the breath, the in-breath, the gap and the out-breath, we naturally start to pay attention to more and more of the breath. We can notice the beginning, the middle and the end of the in-breath, the gap, and then the beginning, middle and end of the out-breath. Noticing more and more of the in and out breath. And that little pause between the in breath and the out breath. Moving towards knowing the whole of the breath from the beginning of the in breath. To the out, the end of the out breath. More and more. And we can bring to mind to allow the breath to calm down, breathing to calm down more and more, becoming calmer or tranquil or refined. Or gentle.
And now, as we're coming close to the end of the meditation, we can share whatever qualities, whatever feelings we experienced in the meditation, whether they be some peacefulness or a stillness in the mind, or happiness or joy, and or more understanding. Share it with everyone here in this hall. And we can expand this feeling of sharing to all those around this hall and keep expanding it and expanding it, sharing whatever quality of your feelings, this warmth, steadiness, stillness, peacefulness, gentleness, or understanding. Sharing with all beings, humans, animals, insects, invisible beings, with all beings, and keep expanding and expanding until we cover the whole of the earth and all realms of existence. And now we can come back to ourselves and just to reflect for a few minutes on what we experienced in the meditation, what stood out for us, what we noticed, what and how we feel now after the meditation, whatever, what else we learned from the meditation. What caused these feelings, these experiences to happen? And we can have the aspiration or intention, keep in mind, keep the breath in mind in our daily life and in meditation, to use it like a dear friend, someone we really appreciate. Bring this calmness, steadiness and stillness to the mind, peacefulness. Our minds. For our own benefit, and for the benefit of those who live here. And now I'll ring the bell 3 times, and if you wish to come out of meditation, you're welcome to. Slowly open the eyes and move the body. So, hope you found that meditation useful, interesting. I noticed that how calming it is. This is the whole point of the breath, actually, it calms the mind right down. And it's aimed, really, one of the things it's aimed at is to calm thinking down. I don't know whether people experience that, but that it will have that effect to bring this calm to the mind. And often when we teach the breath meditation, as I mentioned, usually I teach it, there are a lot of other supports, other things that can make the breath more interesting, something that can draw our attention. I call it interior decoration. That's why I actually did a little bit by suggesting that we regard the breath as a friend. When we have a friend in mind, it's very easy to pay attention, to be with them. We don't tend to wander off with our friends. Other people, maybe, but with our friends we tend to be there with them or for them. So that's very useful. And one of the things that came to mind when I was meditating, actually, very similarly I like, I don't know if you found the paintbrush idea quite useful. It is quite a descriptive one for noticing the quality of the breath, especially the long breath and the short breath. And another idea I read about and I thought, oh, I like it very much, is like our attention being like a surfer on a wave. We're with the breath moment by moment, like a surfer. And that for me really works, to think of the breath as like this wave, the in wave and the out wave, I suppose, and the pause between, you know, as the wave comes in on the beach and then goes out. And the surfer just riding the wave. Because when we're surfing, when people are surfing, not that I'm a surfer, you're very attentive, you're very mindful, and that's why people do sports like surfing or mountain climbing or all these different things. The attention, the mindfulness are very sharp. But we can bring that to the breath meditation, so it's a support for the meditation too. There are many, many skillful ways. You know, you can count breaths, you can use mantras, you can with the breath. And many other ones too. I use feelings mainly with the breath to give a support to the meditation, to give interest to the breath, give colour to the breath. Because as I say, the breath is fairly neutral, but it is a very important aspect of our lives, without which this body would soon be finished and we would be on to our next, heading for our next life, heading for the exit. So I'd like to open up for any comments, questions or complaints from the floor, they say.
Ajahn, thank you for the meditation. A question
about you. Yes. Oh yes, so people can hear it online too, because this is live streaming too now. Everything is.
Thank you for the guidance.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting how when you're concentrating on the breath,
yes,
that you don't manipulate it.
That's important, yes.
Yeah, it's, you know, because full attention's going there,
but that
manipulation process seems to kick in.
Yes.
And then, you know, to ease off that, otherwise you feel like with the effort, the imposter's there, so to speak.
Yeah, yes.
Rather than being clarity and relaxation of some kind.
Yes, because we're so used to controlling or managing things in our lives that when we turn attention to whatever, we tend to bring that agenda, as it were, to manage or control, you know, and it's just very natural that we want to manipulate or, you know, and this can be, even to see that is really, that's quite an insight to see, because we're seeing how the mind works when it's doing this, you know, this feeling that, because sometimes when we're breathing, it's just too peaceful. It's nothing happening. See, Paul? So we tend to, you know, the doer starts coming up. That's a part of our personality, a part of the mind that people, that we identify with. We identify with doing. So it's very hard. And that sense of identity is expressed by controlling, manipulating, etc.
That would kind of be an exercise also in surrendering, you know, surrendering, because then that thinking mind hasn't got the charge.
That's right.
And just by surrendering into it.
Yes. No, that's a good way of thinking about it, you know, just relaxing into it, surrendering into it, softening into it, very, very good. But as I say, just to see this coming up is getting insight into the nature of our minds and the nature of our conditioning, because we're used to managing and doing and all that sort of thing. So it's a good thing to see, actually. Great. Thank you for the comment. And now we usually have any online comments.
Yes, I don't. We have a question that was posted yesterday.
Oh, yesterday. Yeah.
Do we use Buddha's technique that he used, like two kinds of thoughts, and he was a bodhisattva?
Oh, yes. That's one of the very important teachings that the Buddha to be, one of the important techniques he focused on was dividing his thinking or his intentions into two areas, wholesome and unwholesome, and he's looking at the qualities. The unwholesome qualities were thoughts of going towards sense experience, going to the world outside rather than to the world inside, and, you know, to seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching. That's the world we usually live in, and meditation is developing the spiritual world, the inner world, and it's turning the direction inward, not outward. But the mind tends to go out there. That's where we've grazed for ever so long, on seeing, hearing, looking for our happiness from seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching. So that was one of the unwholesome thoughts. And of course the most striking other unwholesome thought or intention is, of course, ill will, this negativity of the mind, whether it be anger, annoyance, irritation, rage, all these negative intentions or thoughts. And then the last one, of course, stemming or coming from, to a certain extent, that state of mind, is the thought of harming other beings. So this is the negative side that the Buddha to be saw, the unwholesome ones he saw as these thoughts going to sensory experience, delighting in the senses, and also this negativity in the mind, the ill will, and this wishing to harm. On the positive side, he saw renunciation. This is a word we use a lot in Buddhism. Renunciation just means this turning from looking outside to looking inside. You know, and it's a very natural process that would happen, because when you think of, say, the Buddha to be, he was brought up in a very comfortable, luxurious way. So he had experienced all the five senses, we say, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching, to the max. And so he realized, yeah, there's some happiness out there, but it's not enough. It's not what, it's not satisfying. It doesn't last. And he's looking for something more. And of course, he was driven by the search to look for an answer to basically the problems of existence, which are being reborn all the time, getting old, getting sick, and dying. If we only experience that once, not too bad. But the Buddha-to-be saw that he saw millions of rebirths, so it's like on repeat again and again and again. And so this encouraged him to look within, to renounce, and then to have thoughts of kindness, of friendliness, of patience, all these positive qualities, contentment, thankfulness, and also thoughts of non-harming. And this is usually expressed in terms of compassion, caring for oneself and others, because we can harm ourselves and others as well. So he divided his thoughts into those two areas. And he noticed that when he developed, if he was developing thoughts about the sensory world, he let go of thoughts of looking within. If he developed negative thoughts, thoughts of irritation, anger, he let go of those qualities of kindness, of friendliness. And if he developed thoughts of harming or intentions of harming, he was letting go of caring and compassion. So he inclined the mind towards the wholesome and away from the negative, the unwholesome. And this is what this was part of his journey before he became the Buddha, to use this division of the intentions that were coming up in the mind, the thoughts coming up in the mind, to really to give the very important thing that comes from it, and we don't realize it actually, is whatever we incline the mind towards, whatever we give attention to, focus on, that will grow and that will become the quality of the mind. And this is a very important aspect of that teaching. And most of us don't realize that. And so you see in the world people really focusing on the negative mind states, negative emotions, and they grow. No big surprise, really. But this is something that the Buddha really emphasized. Whatever we incline the mind towards, whether it be good or not so good, it will grow. So that's a very important teaching from that occurred to him as the Buddha to be, Bodhisattva. And it's actually the second factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. So it makes us aware that the Buddha to be, actually the Noble Eightfold Path, was growing within him before he attained enlightenment and awakening. And so various parts of it were becoming clear to him, particularly this right view and this right intention or right thought, and all that which brings all the other things, influences all the other aspects of the Noble Eightfold Path. So I think that sort of gives you an idea of this. This is Sutta number 19 in the Middle Length Discourses, so you can read it for yourself. The Buddha used nice similes for that too. He mentioned when we have unwholesome qualities in the mind, we should be on the lookout. We should be very watchful, very aware. And so it's like somebody who's looking after the cows when the crops are still growing and the cows could get in and eat the crops. And they have to be very mindful, have to be very aware, and they're tapping the cows with the sticks, keep them away from the crops. And when it comes to wholesome states, he said it's like the same person who looks after the cows, but the crops have all been taken into the village, they've been harvested, and that's a cow herder can just be aware of the cows, where they are, doesn't have to pay close attention to what they're doing, because they can't damage the crops, they can't destroy the crops. And so that's the similes that the Buddha used. So it's more or less encouraging us to be really aware when negative states of mind are operating, and we can relax, chill when positive states of mind, wholesome states of mind are present. It's an important distinction. And most people might think that's quite basic, but most people don't get it. We see it in society largely because we identify with these negative states in mind. I'm the angry person, I'm the cruel person or hurtful person, I'm this, I'm that, you know. And it doesn't allow them to step back and just see these are mind states, and what I give attention to, that will grow, that will become the focus, that will take over the mind, become part of a big part of the mind, bigger part of the mind. So thank you for that question from about the sutta, the two kinds of thoughts, Dvaita Vitakka Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, middle length discourses. It really shows the Buddha's Buddha to be's practice, what incredible amount of intelligence and insight he already had on that path. It was incredible. So intelligence particularly. Yeah. Any more questions, comments or complaints? Yes, please do. Yeah.
Thank you. First of all, thank you so much for the meditation.
All right, good.
Yeah. Great. I have a question about enlightenment and meditation. And I know a guy who's considered to be enlightened, and he didn't seem to advocate for meditation. Mm. And so I was wondering, in your mind, do you think it's possible to attain enlightenment without meditation?
Right. Is it possible to attain enlightenment without meditation? From the Buddha's experience, it would seem not. One has to have meditation, has to be a basis for... because what the meditation does, it really calms the mind down and it removes all the negative qualities from the mind. When the mind is becoming peaceful in the meditation, you're actually seeing a lot of the negative qualities going down, you know, the agitation, lots of desires that we might have, maybe sorts of negative feelings of ill will or whatever, these are going down. So the meditation, what it's doing is reducing these negative qualities, and really the awareness is increasing. So the power of the mind is actually increasing, getting a lot of strength. And then when the mind comes out of meditation, when we come out of meditation, the mind will come out for sure. Then we have this mind that is really clear, powerful and pure. Because what makes meditation really difficult is all these negative qualities in the mind. If you've got a lot of desire, it keeps the mind really restless and agitated. If you've got a lot of ill will or negativity, we're stirred up too. And the mind can't settle, it can't get peaceful, it can't get still. And if we have a lot of drowsiness and dumbness, the same, it will be very difficult for the mind. There's not enough energy in the mind then. There's not enough awareness. And then restlessness and worry, that's another one too. If we're worrying about stuff that we've done and said, and we're just restless, we can't stay present in the present moment. And also doubt, you know, doubts about, are we doing this right, you know? Did the Buddha really become enlightened, and so on. So in terms of the Buddha's experience, for sure, you know, the meditation, he was saying that, you know, that it was due to this often practicing this mindfulness of breathing that he attained his awakening and the ending of the defilements and the ending of grasping, this craving, wanting. So for him, that is definitely the way. So we're working, what becomes enlightened is the mind. That's what becomes enlightened. And that's what is freed too. This is another way of looking at enlightenment, is freed. And what's it freed from? What does enlightenment mean? It's freed from all the negative qualities. Looking, wanting, or craving, or desire, free from ill will, irritation, anger, negativity, free from delusion, not understanding the nature of reality. And so it's free from all of that, and for enlightenment, free from getting reborn again and again, being stuck on repeat. So that's the what enlightenment, that's where enlightenment takes the mind. So these are the qualities, that these are the things that will cease in an enlightened mind. All that negative stuff will go, and the mind will be pure and free from wanting to get reborn. Because that's what drives us from one life to the next, is we want to. So that's what I would say from a Buddhist perspective. I know it's a
No problem.
Yeah. So it's always, there are a lot of people who say they're enlightened in the world, and I think it's always, the Buddha always, you know, very interesting, the Buddha said, what is his advice about people who say they're enlightened, including himself? Check up. Check up. And he gave a whole teaching about how to check up if he was enlightened, you know. So this is something we can do, but usually it's only by having a close association with a person. We can see if their behavior is such that it's it hasn't got negative qualities in it. Their speech is good, and also to a certain one of the biggest tests is, if I practice what this person is teaching, does it bring the same results? Does it bring good results for me? So this is the ultimate test, actually. And of course, you know, many of the Buddha's disciples, they did attain enlightenment in his lifetime, and ever since, you know, they've been enlightened beings. So it's, we need more enlightened beings in the world. So thank you for that question. That's a good question, actually. It's a very good question. Yeah. Well, I think that's maybe. So one more and we'll just finish off. Yeah, we've got 1 minute. Oh, it's 9 o'clock now.
I do this online question. I sometimes find myself searching professions that Buddha was making smiles of, like goldsmiths.
Yes.
Is there much value to research things like turning the profession mentioned earlier to perhaps find more detail of what was meant?
Ah, right. I think, a lot of those details about things that, these are professions that the Buddha didn't recommend for monks and nuns, for Sangha. This is like predicting the future, doing astrology. But in Buddhist countries, who's doing astrology? Monks. It's quite common. And, you know, all sorts of predictions about the future and all those sorts of things. And medicine, he said we shouldn't act as doctors and so forth. We should really be acting as doctors of the mind. And in the end, I think for this person, you know, if generally speaking, if it brings up some happiness and that helps the practice, yes, that's okay to go into this detail, because sometimes it may connect us more with the Buddha than previously. So, but generally, good to focus on the practice and a lot of this detail, it depends, the person may be an academic, so they'd like to go into explaining what these things were that the Buddha mentions in his teachings. So it's very interesting. There's a lot of professions that the Buddha didn't recommend for monks at all, and the astrology and those things in particular. So there's a huge number of things. So So you can't say black or white, but it's good to put one's focus on the practice as much as possible. To use some interest or happiness that they get from this in their practice. Yeah. All right. So now we can, for those who'd like to, we can pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha to finish off.